This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. Syria continues to be a major story, with President Obama planning on giving a speech to the nation on Tuesday night to try to convince us to back him in his desire to send missiles into Syria and knock out some of Bashar al-Assad's command and control buildings there, not going after the chemical weapons themselves, but going after perhaps the delivery method for that. That effort by the president thus far has not been successful. More than half of the people in every poll say they are against us going to war with Syria. Congress doesn't seem to be on his side, particularly in the House, where I think a majority would vote against it, were the vote taken today. Yesterday, there were videos that got out into the media, first with CNN and then the others, and then online, of some horrible pictures of men sprawled on a tile floor convulsing and children unable to shake their whatever it was that had affected them. We were told that it was the sarin gas, the chemical weapons that had been used against them in Syria. That follows the also horrible video from a couple of days earlier of the rebels treating their captured Syrian army members just horribly. And, you know, it's kind of a battle of the visuals and a battle of who's going to win. And in the end, you've got us versus a dictator and a family that has run a country for 40 years. One of the central questions that has not been able to be answered yet is, why would Bashar al-Assad use chemical weapons against his own people? Well, perhaps my next guest can shed some light onto that. He's Alistair Smith, who, along with another NYU political scientist named Bruce Bueno de Mesquita, wrote a book a couple of years ago called The Dictator's Handbook. Alistair, welcome to America Weekend.
Good morning.
Why do you think Assad would use chemical weapons against his own people?
Well, I think what we tend to have this idea about what is the right thing to do. From a leader's perspective, the right thing to do is to attain and retain power. That's all they're interested in doing. And I think that chemical weapons has solidified a lot of his domestic support, and I think he's going to energize any potential his allies overseas, because many of his allies overseas would like to snub the U.S. So I think it's cemented support domestically, and it's going to provide him with resources with which to continue the fight.
You say this is going to help him with domestic support. This is a country that is in civil war.
Absolutely. And whilst the rebels might overthrow Assad in the long run, if his coalition defect on him, he'll be out of power today. So his immediate and overriding concern is to keep those who keep him in power loyal. This means having money to pay them. This means making sure that they know that he's going to be around in the long run to provide resources for them. As long as he's in power, he's going to reward them. And the chemical weapons provides a really good way of making this a credible commitment on his part. There's no soft way for him to step down now. Given the use of chemical weapons, there's no way he's going to be able to quietly go into retirement in a foreign country. No. His supporters know he's got nowhere to go, and therefore they know he's there for the long run. And he's also made it incredibly unpopular for the Alawites. They're the minority sect from which most of his support is drawn. These people are likely to be highly persecuted should there be a regime change. Therefore, they've got all the incentives to remain loyal.
So you're saying it accrues to his benefit with this group of supporters that he is looked at now by the world as a war criminal, even more so than he was when he was killing 100,000 people with conventional weapons.
Absolutely. This is exactly what he's done. He's basically done this heinous act. At the same time, there's blood on the hands of his coalition supporters who are likely to be retaliated and persecuted against should the regime fall. And this is going to make the regime, those who keep the regime in power, even more likely to remain loyal. And this is exactly what he needs. If those people desert him, he's gone. You may notice that early on there was quite a few defections. The number of regime deserters has dropped off quite precipitously. The coalition seems to be very stable and holding now. And militarily, he seems to be holding his own now. particularly with military support from the Russians and financial support from the Iranians.
Yeah, I'm curious if some of those defections might have been stopped only because they said, this guy's using chemical weapons? He's crazy. He'd kill me if I left.
Well, absolutely. That's exactly the kind of things that happen. In Western democracies, we tend to think of, we badmouth people and claim people do horrible things, but we don't lock our political opponents up. We don't kill them. We don't kill their families. But in a dictatorial country, this is precisely the way in which people rule. It's not in any way nice or what we might think of appropriate social dialogue, but it is the way to ensure loyalty. And at the end of the day, that is what dictators care about. They want their coalitions to remain loyal. That's how they go about doing it, being
okay.
Loyal.
Well, if that's the answer to why, if that explains his strategy, then how does that bode for the potential of the United States sending these missiles in there and trying to stop him from using chemical weapons next time?
Well, here's the big rub. I actually don't have any particular insight into how effective a military strike would be. I don't have any access to that kind of classified information. But I'm finding it hard, without the willingness to put boots on the ground, that it's likely to be decisive in the short run. It's going to impose pain. It's going to impose military losses. For example, airplanes could be destroyed and things like that. But it's unlikely to be decisive. What's likely to happen internationally is this is an excellent opportunity for the Russians to continue to supply the Syrian Air Force and the Syrian military. The Iranians will continue providing financial support, because it's going to make the U.S. appear impotent. The U.S. has made lots of threats, and then it's not able to precipitate regime change. It's going to look weak and powerless, and this really is playing into the hands of the Russians and the Iranians, as far as I can see.
So, all right, give me this page out of the dictator's handbook, then. What is he afraid of besides losing power? That's, I know, the worst thing that can happen in a dictator's mind. But what is Assad, in particular, afraid of in this circumstance?
Well, that's you nailed it. That's it. What he's afraid of is losing power.
I mean, that's the sole driving force in this guy's life?
That's the sole driving force in this guy's life. He has no way of getting, is no comfortable way of going into retirement. So for him, it's literally a life and death thing to stay in power. That's all he's driven to do. And staying in power involves being brutal to his domestic people, killing anyone he thinks is likely to defect from his coalition, and carrying out whatever actions will get him the financial resources to keep paying off his coalition. If he runs out of money, this is, I think, his probably biggest concern, is the economy is obviously in shutdown. It was not doing well before the uprising, and now it's basically in shutdown. So, he needs financial resources, mainly because a lot of it's coming from Iran. If that was to dry up, he'd be in a lot of trouble. So I think, it's a practical problem. He's got to keep the flow of money coming in. But this is all with a mind to staying in power.
When you wrote the Dictator's Handbook, you obviously looked at not just Assad, but a bunch of other people around the world who have been in this situation. Do they always have to have a powerful friend like a Russia or an Iran, or is sometimes their megalomania just domestic?
Well, I wouldn't use the term megalomania. Some people have these big cults. Other people are very quiet. Private people, there's many styles for getting it done. The key thing for a leader when they come to power is to find out who's loyal to them, who will back them through thick and thin, and then promote those people to positions of power, and they're the backers of the regime. Now, some people can do this by doing absolutely outlandishly crazy things, and then you can really find out quickly who will follow you to the ends of the earth and who thinks you're a crazy man. Other part of your question was, do you always have to have an external friend?
Yeah.
The answer is not always, but it really helps. So the question is, can you find money internally? Many countries can find money internally. If you happen to be a rich oil state, you don't particularly need an external backer.
Right.
If you don't have access to financial resources and you have these kind of draconian policies, often you send the economy into a tailspin. One of the problems with that is then how do you actually continue to provide money for your supporters? And often that involves reaching out. So much of the Cold War, the US would back one side, the Soviets would back another, and these leaders took these extreme policy positions of communism and capitalism.
That's how you end up with exactly the problems we've had so many times before. Alistair Smith, co-author of The Dictator's Handbook. Thanks for joining me here today.
You're more than welcome. America.